like you just found out. My name's Jamie, this is V. We both work for Google as systems administrators. And today we're going to be talking about POSIX and specifically the name service API, which is the way that directory services are accessed by Unix hosts. These are things that are system databases which map human-readable names to identifiers that the computer uses, or vice versa. And increasingly, as these system databases get pushed out as your network scales to a decentralized directory service, we start to see issues such as noticeable interactive delays, transient and unexpected failures, and costly and critical infrastructure in order to support these directory services as they grow bigger to support a larger and larger organization. Now, Windows and Active Directory Windows uses Active Directory in a similar vein as we use this name service API. Windows actually does a lot better job of scaling and distributing this infrastructure than we do. And the reason for that is because the factors that have influenced our API design date back to the origins of Unix from the 70s and were eventually codified into POSIX in 88. Now, of course, change happens, and so as the way we do distributed computing and shared computing resources changes over time, suddenly the way we need to supply system maps has changed and the API hasn't been able to keep up. So what we want to do today is talk about some of these problems in a little bit more detail, outline the requirements for a solution, and present to you one of the solutions that we've devised and decided was good enough for our purposes. But let's first talk about the way that NSS works, the POSIX API, and give you some background.
Slide. Hi. So raise your hand if you guys feel like you know POSIX, like you know what it is, you're pretty comfortable with it. No, put your hand up. Okay, raise your hand about NSS. Okay, so you guys all right. So we're still gonna go through this. We'll try and go through the relatively faster. There's videotape and other audience members potentially. So POSIX is a definition. It's a standard which defines an operating system interface. So it basically every time you're on a Unixy box like BSD or Linux or whatever, and it feels like Unix, that's because it's conforming to POSIX, and because it's Unix. So POSIX will define things like the library calls that are expected to be available on the system call interface, the utilities, copy, awk, sed, all those guys are defined by POSIX, how their flags look, escape sequences, all that stuff is in there. But the part of POSIX that we're concerned with is the part that allows you access to system databases that we've shoved off onto directories. So those in particular are actually a pretty limited set portion of the API. There's a few more calls in this, you're down to get something by name, get something by ID, or get an entry. The name and ID ones are pretty obvious. The entry one is an iterative loop through the entire database. Even DNS, you go through this, you get host by name. So it's pretty limited, and you don't have a lot of choices in how to access this. But if you don't use these functions, you're breaking POSIX standard. You're not conforming as a good little application should.
And so these functions get called all the time, from when you're getting logged in.
If I get too close to you, we get this.
So when you're logging in, the system needs to look up who you are and map that name to an ID, and then also look up the groups that you're in. When you're listing files in a directory, you're mapping the UID and the GID of the file to human-readable names. As we said, DNS goes to the same system and many, many other maps. But where does this data all come from? Back in the day, databases were all plain text files. All of the system information you need is stored in, etc. And it doesn't really matter that these files, these functions are being called all the time because they are just plain text files that are stored locally on the disk. So the round trip time to actually make the system calls is almost not noticeable, like in the order of microseconds. So the problem arises when we start to get bigger and bigger networks. We need to start sharing this information around, especially user and group databases between systems. Because our shared infrastructure is growing and people need to be able to log into more than one machine. Now, as Cetra hosts, we solve the problem of scaling the network by creating DNS. More and more of these databases start getting pushed onto the network into a centralized lookup system. But back then, the trivial lookup effectively was a call into libc which directly read the file. So as I said, we grew the network and we started to push all this data out to different services. We started putting them in, hosts into DNS. We started using Hesiod and LDAP and NIST and Active Directory for the storing or the system databases. So what we need is a way for the system to be able to configure so that at runtime you would easily be able to modify the way that the computer was able to map this data to different locations. And our Sun were the first people to devise this, and they called it the name server switch. Now the name server switch is because we are looking up names, not just name servers. So it's not specifically DNS, but it's all kind of names to ID mappings. The service is this set of API calls. And a switch, because what we've done is we now map different types of data to different locations. So here you can see on the left that the password map is and the groups map and the shadow map and the host map are all being retrieved from a set as you go left to right different data sources. So for example, hosts, first let's look at the files database and then let's look at the DNS database. So we go left to right in that order until we find the data we're looking for. Now, for our own convenience, and possibly to confuse you, we're going to use the term NSS to describe both this API that we described earlier, the get nam, get ID, get ent, and also the whole subsystem that the Sun first implemented in glibc is now copied, all under the same banner, NSS.
So let's take a look at how things stand under NSS. And by the way, these slides, these diagrams, they're amazing, right? Raise your hand. Okay, we did them ourselves. Glad you like them. So some command, some process makes a call to the API, in this case to get Bob's password entry. So now this goes into libc, which actually handles it. There's an NSS subsystem, which is configured to go out and check the nsswitch.com. And now here's the interesting part. That dynamically loads via dlopen will actually pull in a library. The library's name is pre-specified, so you can put any word you want here, and libc is going to go out and try and find libnss underscore that word. It's also dlopen, so if you do an LDD or you look at what your it was in your linker table, you're not going to see it because it gets done at runtime. So a lot of SAs who are debugging stuff don't actually realize that they're making calls out to these libraries all the time. So then files goes out and does the parsing and returns the struct that you want. It's pretty straightforward. Now we add in NSS LDAP into network. So it's pretty much the same picture as before. We go through, we check files. Now we've got LDAP in the picture. So the interesting thing here is we're no longer going to a local database. We're egressing over the network. That means for LDAP, of course, that's a TCP connection. So you've got the overhead of establishing that. You've also got all the burr encoding, ASN1 encoding, decoding junk that you have to do. And a lot of times you end up with an SSL connection on top of this so you can trust where your data is coming from. So there's a fair amount of overhead going out to the network every time you do this. And overhead's not fun, especially if you're just looking up the same person over and over again, so it would be really good if we could add in a caching daemon.
Okay, so glibc provides this caching daemon, NSCD, short for the name service cache daemon. It's communicated to over a Unix socket, and it is multi-threaded, so it can handle multiple requests at the same time. And what it does is, as it receives a request, it dynamically loads the module specified from the name server switch into memory, and then calls out every time it gets a cache miss. And when it does not get a cache miss, it gets a cache hit. It just returns back to C to libc over that Unix socket. And so this is pretty much the status quo with Linux and directory services on the client side today.
And it has problems. Yeah, thank you. I'll repeat that question. And it sucks. There's a couple quiet assumptions made by this whole thing. And a lot of it comes back from when we had etc/password. The API was designed around the simple system databases we had. NSS was effectively added as an afterthought as things grew. The two quiet assumptions we made is that it never fails. You don't expect a read of a local file to fail. And if it does, you've probably got bigger problems. So there's actually, if you look in the POSIX API for all these entries, all these functions, there's no E again. There's no error condition. Please try again later. This guy might be in the system, but we can't find him. And that actually leads to some problems. Applications can't decide if, so since applications don't know if it was a temporary failure, they have to assume that that person's not there or that group's not there. The other thing that's assumed is that it's fast. So one of the things you'll see, and one of the slowdowns that we see, is that this is directly in the code path of a lot of common commands. It's in the code path of interactive things like login, ls-l, and so forth. And that means that if it's not fast, it's going to have an interactive effect on the end user. And that's not desirable. So the problem here is that we introduced the network. And we know the network can fail, and we know that the network can be slow. So what happens when it fails and when it's slow? Let's sort of establish the failure modes that we run into. Well, you can sort of group them in a couple different categories. And there's a lot more than we put up here, and I'm sure you guys can think of some pretty cool ones. But generally, you get a lot of access failures. Login fails, access to files fails, you're not in the right group, or the file server that you're connecting to can't look you up. Apache denies you with basic auth, or some custom, you know, J2EE solution that does a system lookup fails. You get behavioral changes. The big one is sendmail. So when you're doing a local var spool delivery, and sendmail can't find you, then it doesn't think you're there, and it rejects your message. If you had E again, it could temp fail and say, you know, let me try and deliver this later. There's other changes like CGI, cron jobs on execute, scripts. A lot of scripts break in subtle ways when you're doing like ps-ef and you're grepping something. I know there are better ways to do it. And you're doing anything that ends up looking at usernames or user IDs, those will start failing on you. There's also slowness.
If you imagine the situation where you're trying to log into a machine remotely and you're stuck at the console waiting for the login prompt to return. And the reason is it hasn't returned yet is because the NSS connection has stalled over the network waiting to do the lookup. And this is a problem that can even affect root logins because root's login is still subject to NSS and there's no magical quick exit for root as a special user. Automated jobs can stall too, such as cron. If you have a job that runs every 5 minutes and you expect it to take maybe 2 minutes to run, all of a sudden it's doing user lookups and they're taking a long time to return. You can imagine that the job might take, say, 6 minutes to return. And as time goes on, more and more jobs started and haven't finished yet. The effect is that the system load will increase and the capacity of the server to provide the service that it needs to do is drastically reduced because of this higher load. So what actually causes all of this slowdowns and failures, Steve?
That's a good question. I wish I knew. So actually, I should point out that the special case of root login coming in for NSS LDAP, just to spread the word because it's very hidden, there is actually a flag in the newer NSS LDAP libraries that tells you not to expand like the groups that root is in. So it doesn't walk over the network necessarily. But it's still, no one knows about that. So the general, you split the side. I'll have to put it, I don't remember off the top of my head. Do a search for it. It's in a mailing list. just like all other pieces of information.
It's a well-documented.
Yeah, well-documented in a mailing list via to web. So there's a couple of fundamental, you can split this up into general problems that you're going to have with network services. Now, a lot of you are probably old hats and you know about all these problems with network services. But for the benefit of everyone, we're going to bore you a little bit. Benefit of the tape. High tape. And then there's also general reasons for performance problems. And then there are the specific reasons to the library, to the NSS implementation, to the designs, and so forth. So the general failure, network and services are unreliable. We don't give SLAs in the 100% range. We give SLAs 3 nines, 4 nines, half of a nine, you know, the best we can do. And the way we achieve, especially over the network, and the way we achieve that typically is through a lot of redundancies. Redundant servers, redundant network paths, and that gets to be expensive. So when we look at this, a solution like this can work in a small environment that's well controlled with lots of redundancies. You've worked over the software, you've worked out the bugs. But when you start to scale that to a lot of locations and you start losing some of your options, it can, at the very least, it gets expensive to duplicate all these redundancies. And that's not fun. Then there's also failure modes you can't avoid. Bad optics, loose line card, router loop, third-party vendor, load balancers that you can't control, all sorts of bugs that can catch you. But beyond all of it, NSS still doesn't handle failures. So it doesn't expect even that 0.01% to come through. Lastly, which is worth pointing out, is raise your hand if you want to support a critical service that will never go down. No one's raised. Oh, you want to? I don't want to. I have no desire to support something that's critical. You want to, from my philosophy, is to remove the criticality from as many systems as possible so that if it does happen to go down, your users aren't impacted. I'd love to get rid of DNS, you know? It was a trick question, yeah. Well, I guess in some sense we love supporting it because we feel important and loved. But good point. That someone pointed out that I asked that one that will never go down versus one that should never go down. If anyone finds that service, please tell me. So there's actual, before we look at performance failures, let's look at performance impact.
Okay, so as far as a user's concerned, even tiny slowdowns are really noticeable. In this paper by Miller and 68, He stated that about 0.1 of a second is about the time that it takes for a user to start notice or to still feel that the system is responding in an instantaneous manner. And about 1 second is about the time when a user starts to have their train of thought interrupted. So we really want to, you need to be able to get rid of the slowdowns in a general case, but how do you actually mitigate transient slowdowns in a network that could be due to any number of reasons? Ideally, we want to make sure that the system, the network is never slow, and I don't think that's something we can guarantee.
I keep waiting for the 1 second pause where he loses track of his thoughts.
I've been practicing.
Yeah. Okay, so the speed of light. This is a factor that can really bite you. Again, when I said small controlled local networks, that's fine. Now you start dealing with a lot of sites globally spread across the entire world. Anyone recognize this one? Okay, that's Flinders Street. That's down the street. I hope that's Flinders Street, or Wikipedia lied to me. very old.
I took that today.
My black and white camera. So when you have a globally distributed network, and you have clients that need access to the NSS services all across the world, you've got two choices. You can either put your services local to all those clients, or you can have them egress over the WAN link to get their data. I'm not going to argue too strongly against this, but there is a downside to putting local services everywhere. There's cost of all the machines, there's support of all the machines, there's things blow up, especially when you get into, you know, dozens of sites. So ideally, you want to minimize that footprint and go over the LAN, WAN to a central point. The problem with the WAN, and I think you guys in Australia are especially sensitive to this, as I've seen from the ping times out of here, you have unavoidable latencies due to distance, due to the speed of light. You also have bad ISPs, which I'm not going to name any Australian ones because this is on tape. But you have bad ISPs that you just can't avoid. You have a choice between bad and worse in two different locations. And then you also get a lot of packet loss that's out of your control. So actually, packet loss is a really interesting thing. So I'm going to put a little footnote here and tell you about if you have a lot of short-lived TCP connections, like a single LDAP query that's about 30 packets, well, if you do the math, 1% packet loss translates to losing a SYN or a SYN ACK every 6 connections. And does anyone know the default timeout of the Linux TCP stack when it hasn't established a round trip time? 3 seconds. 3 seconds. That's a 3 second hang on login, which maybe ain't so bad, but 3 second login ls-l every 6 lookups. So that can actually get pretty user impactful. So basically, you have a choice between this critical structure infrastructure everywhere or just putting it over the WAN. So the question was, if you have a really big directory with a lot of lookups, it's a lot of lookups. Not the question in the comments. Yeah, thank you. Which feeds nicely into this slide, that it's actually a whole lot of network traffic. Already went through this one. Okay, so the volume of traffic is not minimal. When you have a 10,000 user password, that's 6 megs on the wire. I've actually done the measurements, and that's how many bytes you put on the wire. And for a large group, it's about 1 meg. So if you've got 1,000 groups for 10,000 users, you know, and then this blows up if you've got 20, 30, 40, 50. You start getting into 10 and 20 megabyte range for full dumps of these. Basically, over WAN especially, that ends up being more than 0.1 seconds. Another slide. Jamie will talk soon, I swear. So the volume of queries is also not insignificant. So it's not just the size of the queries, but we've empirically determined that on average, hosts seem to do about 7,000 lookups per day. Now, there's a wide variance on that, and there's a whole lot of different contributing factors from user behavior, application behavior, and so forth. So you may not see 7,000, or you may see some that do vastly more than that and vastly less.
I think I should point out that this is 7,000 per day on a host running, as we described earlier, the status quo using a cache daemon at the same time?
Yeah, NSCD is turned on for this. That's good. And this is not even traffic. There's peak traffic. Peak traffic will coincide with peak WAN traffic, which makes your performance even worse. And again, for small controlled LAN, you may not see this if you're lucky.
Okay, so there's a lot of network chatter going on. So for the case where you're trying to dump the full user map over the network, you're doing a get end loop. Now, good implementations of NSS LDAP will not translate 10,000 user database into 10,000 individual LDAP queries as they do a get end loop. It will the first one will probably trigger a full dump of the entire database and store it in memory locally, and let GDBC just retrieve out of memory for each of the subsequent ones until the that map is no longer needed. There's still several megabytes over the WAN at the time, and that only works if you actually know you're going to be doing a loop. So if you're doing an ls-l/home, you don't actually know that every single user exists in that before you do the lookup. So you're actually going to be doing tar potentially 10,000 if you had like all of /home mounted. So NSS LDAP at least appears to be asynchronous in this behavior, so that's fairly good if you are trying to retrieve the entire user database at once. But this is kind of hard to cache because NSCD itself is a hit and miss cache for individual records. It doesn't really have any idea about the whole map. So when you have already cached a single record, it will still have to go to the network to retrieve that record a second time. Because it doesn't know how to cache the full map, it won't actually bother to try and cache the getEnt loop itself. So if you need to retrieve the whole user database twice, then that's two calls to the network and two suck downs of potentially 6 megabytes. So it's a network trip every single time. Actually, one important case where you are doing a getEnt loop over entire map is when you log in. The initGroups call is a function that looks up what groups you're a member of in order to set up your user environment. This does a loop over the entire group database to match your username against the members of that group. Now, recent NSCDs are a little bit better because they will cache the initGroup call itself, but the underlying getEnt loop itself is not cached still. But all of that's much of a muchness because caches are still caches and they have timeouts, and the TTL on NSCD is relatively short, in the order of about 5 minutes. So you're going to at least be doing another lookup over the network in 5 minutes' time for your username in just about every case. And if the daemon is restarted for whatever reason, there's no persistence between restarts. So all of the data that you potentially had in memory is going to be lost as soon as the daemon is restarted. It crashes. And there are quite a few cases where that might happen. NSCD is a particularly difficult piece of software because it is heavily threaded, as I said earlier. But that opens us up to a whole lot of interesting failure cases, such as race conditions, timing errors, and deadlocks. And potentially n threads is not always enough to support a busy system. The default of 8 threads means that you can only have 8 concurrent requests at the same time before you start blocking. If you were to boost that, then you start having more and more threads running in the system, which can increase the likelihood that you're actually going to have a deadlock between the threads. NSCD itself, the code is very optimized for the speed of the call and not so much for readability, which makes actually trying to diagnose where these race conditions exist quite difficult. And another design decision made by the NSCD developers is to dynamically load the third-party NSS modules into its own address space. That has the effect that you basically have to trust now that third-party developers, such as the authors of NSS LDAP, have got their module bug free, because now NSCD itself is vulnerable to any implementation errors in that new code. So recently, NSS LDAP was patched for a file descriptor leak. It every so often would forget about a file descriptor that it had used to make the LDAP connection. And that had the effect that NSCD itself would gradually lose file descriptors because it's in the same address space, with the eventual effect that NSCD would crash. NSCD also has a very small stack size, which means that modules who would like to use the stack to store the results of their queries will be in for a big surprise when they try and pull a large chunk of data and then place it into the stack. So you can imagine that if with a 1 megabyte stack and you had, say, 2 megabytes of user data and you would like to place that into the stack, then you're very likely to smash the stack. So there are many bugs and leaks and overruns and stack smashes and tantrums that you need to have a babysitter running to just make sure that you still have this daemon able to provide service. Or you could just not run a cache at all, but then you're going to reopen yourself to all of the potential vulnerabilities or causes of error in having a LAN link. At this point, I think we've done complaining, and we'd like to actually start being constructive and present to you the potential for a solution. Yes? I can't comment on the original design decisions that made it so.
So actually, no. The question, by the way, was why is it that it calls NSCD and then...
So it wants to hit the cache first, because potentially the cache will have the right answer first. Going back into libc itself? I don't know.
The cache, so NSCD actually goes back into libc. So NSCD is calling the same set of libraries. The thing about NSCD is it needs to do the lookup itself so it can use its own routines to jam it into a hash in memory. So NSCD has to do the lookup itself in order to get the entry. I mean, you could do some handoff. It wasn't in the design to have the library then do it and then hand it to NSCD. Seemed like probably extra round trip. But that's my understanding. So let's actually look at requirements. Hopefully we've bashed into your head that doing this over the network is horrible and, you know, running this critical service is no fun and everything stinks. So what do we actually want to do? Well, this whole thing centered around those two implicit assumptions that based on etc password, that this is going to be fast and this is going to be reliable and to some extent this is going to be consistent. It'll be consistently fast and consistently reliable. Well, the funny thing is the best way to meet that, okay, so we're going to go through requirements. I totally got screwed there. So the first thing we want is we need it to be 100% reliable, which means no network in the code path. We need to get rid of the whole variance of the network and just pull it straight out of the code path. We don't want, at any point, any code to go out to the network directly in the line of this call. The second thing is we know that software is hard. We write new software, it's going to have its own set of stack smashes and bug yummies. So let's minimize the software that we use here, and let's attempt to reuse stable software that someone else did. The next one is persistence. We don't want to have to go back out to the network when some daemon crashes or after reboot or something. So persistence, at least temporarily and preferably across reboot, would be ideal. The next thing is we'd like some control over this. We'd like to be able to tune some of the SLAs and parameters involved. That helps us tune where we put our infrastructure, which puts control over where we can put our services. And finally, we want this to be easy to use, easy to debug. We're taping on these. We can't do hard stuff. So as I was about to say earlier, the end result of this is to go back to the 70s, to go back to etc password. I am deadly serious. Etc password is what this was built around, and etc password is what works. You know, all the other solutions we've seen to date and that have been implemented are problematic. The only problem you have with etc password is keeping it up to date. And it turns out that if that's the problem you're trying to solve, it's not that hard a problem to solve. Keeping things up to date, and with the availability of monitoring systems to check and make sure things are actually up to date, it's a pretty easy thing to solve. So we just decided to solve that. And this is how we solved
it. This is the answer.
The comment was laughter for the video.
So the data is in LDAP, and we'd like to get it locally, so we can just dump that and mangle it a little bit and then write it to a file. We wouldn't actually like to write over a etc password because we don't really want to interfere with the way the operating system vender is doing their user management for system daemons, for example. So instead, we can write to a different file or a different backend cache database, whatever, and write a new NSS module, or possibly use an existing one that will work in harmony. So we can just use NSS's existing system and just have a second NSS data source. Because we don't longer have this in the code path, we can just write it in whatever language we like, something high level that we can understand. It doesn't have to be a compiled language, which makes it all the better because it means that we're not possibly going to have ourselves open to any kind of trivial software bugs like buffer overruns and so forth. So if we pick a high level scripting language, then it's going to be pretty easy. So the solution we've implemented is a program called NSS Cache, which is a Python library and a small executable front end to that library. All it does is expect some data source, it expects to be able to write to some back end, and it knows how to synchronize various types of maps from the upstream database and write it to the correct format as expected by the cache back end. So in this case, we have an LDAP data source. We are writing to a Berkeley DB provided, which will be eventually read by the NSS DB module and is going to synchronize the password group and shadow maps. This program currently supports only LDAP, but we'd like to be able to support different methods of supplying the data in the future, potentially SQL or NFS-mounted files or XML over HTTPS, who knows. We don't have a pressing need to do so, so we welcome patches if anyone wishes to implement them. We do support currently password, group, shadow, and netgroup maps. We would like to be able to, well, currently we have in development auto-mount support as well. So that will be available real soon now.
So just to interject, the reason for those choices, if you think about password and groups are the obvious ones. Those get hit all the time. Shadow map gets hit on login, might as well put it down too. And sometimes other cases. Auto mounts, if you have a lot of auto mounts, that's going to be painful for you to retrieve them from LDAP every time and add to delay. And the last one was net groups, which some people use a lot, some people don't.
Yeah. The current backend supported the Berkeley database and plain text file in the same format as the Setra password. It would be easy to add other backends such as SQLite, and if people think that that's necessary, we would happily accept patches to do so, but that would require writing more NSS modules too, which we're not interested in doing presently. It's a very simple configuration file, as you can see here. There are some other options to be able to configure where your LDAP server is and what your base DN is and so on and so forth, to specify the path that we'd like to write the database files to eventually. It's got locking so that concurrent runs don't interfere with each other, an incremental update support, so you only have to retrieve the data that's changed since the last time you ran, lots of logging and hooks to monitor to make sure that the freshness of the data is in concert with your SLA. It's a tool written by SAs for SAs, so we'd hope that you'd find all the features you'd expect from a tool you'd actually want to run in production.
Yeah. So a few things to point out. Because we're running this local cache, and going back to our requirements, I mean, persistence is obvious. We're reusing things like NSS files and NSS DB. Those are old, reliable pieces of software. The interesting thing is, where's my slide? The interesting thing is, so because we're not going over the network, a slow network means that your updates are just going to slow down, which aren't necessarily as important as your user interactivity and your user's function, your application functionality. Also, if your service is unavailable, you just lag in updates. Turns out that updates in a lot of these things aren't too critically important. If you're using groups to control access in a centralized location, typically you've either got really heavy monitoring on that lagging behind in its updates, or you can leave that one machine or two machines and put those network close to a directory service and tie it into direct directory lookups, and so not even do this caching for those few places. So it ends up working out pretty well that way. Also, spammy hosts that get in their mind to call these over and over and over and over again, they just hit local lookups. So we meet our requirements, and we get a lot of cool benefits.
So that pretty much brings us to the end. There's a couple of things that we still want to implement. As I said, auto mount support. We'd like to be able to. There's a couple of bugs with performance. Not so much bugs, but just performance issues. Python has some. Python objects in general tend to use a lot of memory, and when you pull a large map into Python from LDAP, that might explode the amount of memory we use, and we don't really want that because we'd like to be able to use this on smaller systems that don't have a lot of memory. And we've got some workarounds for that in the pipeline. We've been talking to some Python developers to get their feedback on that. We would like to be able to support the ability to rewrite the data as it gets written to give you some extra functionality in mangling. So, for example, you might want to change where people's home directories are in a local system because you might have a box, say, in a DMZ that you'd like to put into a TRUD or something. I don't know. You know, random things, features. We have just realized that there's some issues on the code.google.com website that we hadn't previously known about. So one thing on the to-do list is actually pay attention to what's going on outside.
We didn't get emailed about that.
Yeah, it's like we expect to be emailed and you know.
Yeah, I didn't know that's a feature request.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we'll bugs.
We'll smack some heads around.
Yeah. We have a little shim that wraps around NSS files that points to a different text file.
Yeah.
Which we didn't mention earlier, but we just like to open source that. It's really trivial, like 100 lines of C that wraps the function calls in.
Here's the reason for that, and this is actually kind of interesting. So NSSDB, which is an easy alternative to etc files, to etc password and so forth. The problem with that is it's Berkeley database. Any of you ever worked with Berkeley database? And how many of you have shuddered? Okay, many of you who haven't even worked with it should just raise your hands and just start shuddering. But it works well enough, and when it's statically used like this, it's not such a big deal. But it's a hash, it's a B-tree or a hash. So when you have to work over all the keys, like when you're doing a getEnt loop, it actually takes quite a while. So we found that if for a local, close, fast directory server, doing the loop over the Berkeley database locally was as slow as going out to LDAP and dumping it on the line. So we decided to take a look at the files a second time. And files was great, but we didn't want to do the merging. We didn't want to merge the stuff in etc password. So we wrote a shim that basically does callbacks to the NSS files. So it's a very lightweight shim. The difference is it changes the name. It appends like a .cache to it. So you get etc password.cache and root.cache and shadow.cache. So we can just dump stuff there, append cache to the nssswitch.com, and it'll look up from both places. So we're going to put that out on there because it came in really handy.
Yeah, there's also some packaging we'd like to do, get some Debs and RPMs out there, so it's easy to install.
Who's a Debian maintainer? Good job, Pat.
Yeah. And that's, we invite everyone to this. The question was, have we considered the use of generators to work around Python's memory usage? Yeah. No, we haven't.
So,
let's put this.
I'm not guaranteeing this can work, but I've used it before in this situation where you can basically iterate through the database and then you consume the data as it comes in and then only tell the, only then when you're done tell the iterator to move on to the next data set. So basically you don't store very much in the Python. That's just a tip. The other one is a comment. I could make it a question. I could say, like, you know, have you heard of, which isn't necessarily what I want to do, but a friend of mine, Gabriel Rosenkoetter, has delivered a speech in LISA 2000 in New Orleans, where he was pretty much talking about something like that. Now, he didn't do Python or anything, he used rsync, but he got vicious security-related comments back. So if you're interested, I'm happy to establish contact with him, because I couldn't, I was just looking, I couldn't find the threads with the vicious comments, but you might want to ask him what the problems were.
That's very interesting. We had some security issues. We had some security questions, which we talked about, and we eventually resolved. I don't remember what the questions were. Hang on. but in answer to the Python one, the reason why we want it in RAM is because we do a bit of mangling, and we read off the database from disk and then compare it. I guess you could do it on the fly, but we currently don't do that. We just do the whole merge in RAM. So we'd like to have full copies of both.
So with regards to security, and we'll get to you. So rsync, you can do this. You can build these maps and rsync them out. You can use an SS cache one machine. When you have a local host and you're doing an SSL bound query to a directory service, you have the SSL certificate trust to tell you that you're going to the right place. And then you're getting all of your maps dynamically. So when you switch that to a local map that's sourced out of LDAP using SSL, you have effectively the same pipeline and you open yourself only up to the risk of old data. So the two responses I have to that are one side response, if you are root on these machines, it doesn't matter anyways. You can override what LDAP tells you, you can change these caches, you only worry about that domain. The other thing is, with regards to freshness, a good, if this is on like a workstation, you've got a ton of them and some of these fall behind, your security tends to be centralized to the servers that have the important information. You don't trust the host anyways. So if the data gets out of date, you better hope that you're not using like RPC sys auth on NFS to have the guy say, yeah, I'm really allowed to get that file. You're using something else that delegates the lookup to the file server so they can tell you. So we actually haven't run into any like massive widespread security issues with it. It would be interesting to know. So please send us that thread after and we'll see if we miss something. Next questions? And hand the mic out.
I kind of danced around that one earlier. The question was, why didn't we use NSS Update DB, which is a program that comes with NSS DB, which does effectively the same thing. It reads from an LDAP directory and writes it to a Berkeley database. Why didn't we use that? Well, first of all, it came from the same authors as NSS LDAP, and having read that code, I felt more comfortable writing my own in Python. secondly, because it is a C program, it's susceptible to bugs, and Python is a nice language in that we don't have to worry about memory allocation because it has a garbage collector. Obviously, it has issues, as we previously described with the memory, but you know, easy to work around, and it doesn't cause crashes that we would then have to become ninjas at GDB to solve.
I think ultimately, if any of you guys decide to go with something like this and you want to use us NSS Update DB, that's fine. Use it, feed the bugs back upstream, fix everything. We don't care if you use our stuff or something else. We're just saying, for the sake of your users, for the sake of having your critical infrastructure in too many places, consider simply dumping it locally and using it the way 1970s engineers.
The real takeaway we want from this is that everyone considers using local caches for all of this data rather than using our specific implementation of that. So.
Okay, so I think I know what you're asking. I'm going to repeat the question for the sake of time. So the question was basically, if you don't want to have the password hashes locally, you know, what you're either going to say what you can do, or what I would do, what I would suggest is simply don't, you can, if we add local filtering, you can filter them out of what you pull via the query, or actually you wouldn't typically have ACL access to everyone else's anyways. So we actually default to non-usable passwords in Shadow. And we expect that the consumers of this will go through some PAM module that does offline access. So we expect you to use PAM LDAP or PAM curve or something, so you're not going locally. And we actually don't support pulling the password map down because we don't expect you to have access to it. We can probably change that. But.
So our implementation blames as an anonymous user, so it hopefully if your LDAP directory is set up correctly, your ACLs don't allow read access to the passwords. And as V said, the PAM is not NSS. We're specifically talking about the name service and not the authentication at the initial login.
What PAM you need? More questions?
That's right. The
protocol, say that again? It's typically RFC 2307 LDAP. We expect to connect to an RFC 2307 schema and LDAP server. Correct. We don't use NSS to do the queries. We do the queries through Python LDAP directly. So the question was basically you've got a position where you can't really use LDAP. Is that what I'm understanding? So you can't use LDAP as a distribution media. So that's actually why we've both the source data source and the data targets, we've abstracted them. So you can drop in a new data source. So if you want to do an HTTP request and fetch it over XML, and that's easier for your infrastructure, do that. It's actually really quite trivial to write that support in, and we'd actually probably be open to doing that if you had a well-structured request. We can also, MySQL would be a trivial one as well, although that's probably no better for you than LDAP. So you could do whatever tricks you want to play with distribution. We can drop in new sources to fetch that. It could even be a local source, and you write your own push daemon. Active Directory, yeah, that's fine.
So if I can preempt a potential question, the other option then is to run NSS cache on a single machine and then just push the generated maps out to every using some other distribution structure on the other side of this program. So potentially you could use, say, rsync if that's suitable.
How do you do the incremental updates? And do you require any special features of the LDAP server?
We currently depend on the semantics of OpenLDAP in a variable called modify timestamp that they have currently said that they don't plan to deprecate. So we saw the timestamp of the last update and then perform a query against that modify timestamp.
So the downside of this, we forgot to mention this for a feature request. The downside of this is, obviously, during incremental updates, you don't get the things that were deleted. So you have to periodically do a full update to get the things that were deleted. One of the features we'd like to support is to take a closer look at using basically context CSN and some of these other open LDAP capabilities that they use for SyncREPL, so that you can, as a consumer, you can effectively know what's been deleted with a small query. The reason we want to keep these queries small is we'd like to keep them fast. And typically, you want changes more than you want deletes. If you delete someone from a group, you'll still get the changed group and so forth. So there's a few arguments down that path that I'll skip for the sake of brevity. But we do want to add in more complete incremental updates. But right now, they're blindingly fast. 50 million queries from 10,000 hosts becomes 500,000 a week at fixed intervals that don't matter with speed.
Thank you very much.